Okay, thank you. Yeah, so I'm Artie Sharma. This involves work with Igor Mezich, who's local, Beverly McKeon at Caltech, and also half of Monash, Paco Gomez, Hugh Blackburn, Murray Rudman, and Beverly was involved in that. So thanks to ARC and also KITP for the chance to talk. So I'm going to say stuff that's kind of obvious in hindsight, but I hadn't seen said. So if it was obvious to you beforehand, then, you know, please have patience. So I'll do a historical approach, if you like. This figure was shown at APS a year ago. And on the left are some resolvent modes for turbulent pipe flow, or a resolvent mode, and on the right a D&D mode for the same flow, and they look the same, and we thought, oh, this is very nice, I can show that the two look the same. And then the question arose, yes.
On the left is the one, and on the right is the other?
Yeah, so these are two different resolvent modes. If you don't know what that is, that's fine, I'll explain it later.
And on the other are the D&Ds.
And these pair are from data. So this is not from data, and this is from data.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
they're messy versions of that.
Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. In fact, that's the whole point of the talk, really. So we'll get to why that is in a minute. So the observation is, they look the same, isn't that fantastic? And then Igor Mezich came up to me after that talk and said, yeah, okay, but why? And I, all after the talk before, it doesn't matter, came up and said, okay, but why? And he sort of had a reason for why, which is what I'll tell you. And it's not so surprising in hindsight, but when we did it, we didn't know. And so just to describe how this is from a simulation which is Fourier transformed in the azimuth and generated from a lot of snapshots for these streamwise planes. Yes?
Programs bother everybody trying to figure out who
that's okay.
Paco is.
Paco's yeah, I'm getting there. I'm working my way to top. I'm about here, and I'll get down to there in a minute.
Sorry, you've run out of time.
So I have to chew into Denise's talk. So this is generated from I forget, but many gigabytes of data of streamwise cross sections of turbulent flow. And there's okay. So there we go. So Paco is Francisco Gomez, who's Hugh's postdoc at Monash, who did this, generated this data set and did the D&D. Okay, and the puzzle is why do they look the same? And Igor provided an answer. So, fine, I'll get on with that. It feels a bit weird explaining what Koopman modes are when Igor's here, but I shall attempt it, and you can correct me where I'm wrong. So the Koopman mode is a general way of analysing nonlinear systems or dynamics thereof. Closely related to D&D in a way that I'm not interested in discussing, other than that those D&D modes are supposed to look like the Koopman modes, realised from data. And so the question was, why do they look so similar? And also, can we use the reason why they look similar to determine Koopman modes from a subset of the data that you want the Koopman modes for? Okay. Okay, so if I may give a brief introduction of what Koopman is, Koopman mode is. So say you have a dynamical system with state U evolves. We'll define some kind of state operation that takes the state and then does something to the state. In this case, evolves the state forwards a certain amount of time. Let's call it tau. And then related to that is something called the Koopman operator for that particular state transformation, where you have a function of the state and it applies that state transformation to the state and evaluates the observable or the function at that transformed say. Okay. And then if you allow tor to be a parameter, you get a whole family of these guys. Okay. And it turns out that this operator is linear but infinite dimensional, so the price you pay for the linearity is the infinite dimensionality. And so Eagle likes to look at the spectrum of this operator because many things that you can appear. Yes.
Yes. Oh, I just thought I would counteract your impression that you're. Some of us don't know what Kuprin modes are.
Okay. Okay. Yes.
I'm not alone in this.
You're not alone.
No, that's okay.
Go back.
Yeah. So thanks.
So yeah, you know.
This much we get, I think. I can speak for everybody.
If you're with me up to here.
We don't know what H is.
It's just some function of the state.
But the operator then should depend on the function.
Yes, yes. Is this a for all or there exists?
Well, so it takes any function H of the state.
It's any function H.
Yeah, so you can propose an H and it will give you the H of. That state having that state transformation.
You at a particular point in space, say.
It has to be a scalar function, right?
So I've written it as a scalar function.
The x velocity at 1.73 or something.
Okay? Yeah,
and then. It's a projection of you.
Yeah, so, and there's another sort of Koopman specialist in the back, just behind you as well. But. So yeah, it could be any scale. So it could be a probe data, or it could be some sort of more averaged.
And you may choose any H.
At this point, there's nothing particularly special about H. Yeah.
Is but, U locked to H? You determine.
No. Is U tau right? U tau is the U tau corresponding to that H.
H
H is just a
if you choose a different H, will you get a different U tau?
Can I intervene briefly?
Yes.
We have state space, and we have states on the state space. Take any function that takes a point in state space to a complex plane.
Okay.
Now evolve that function forward.
Yes.
With the flow.
Yes.
And assign the value of the function that you have observed time tau later to the point where you started from. That gives you a new function.
Yes.
Because for every point p, now you have a new value.
Yes.
So there is an operator that takes a function that you had initially to a function that you had at time tau. That operator is the Koopman operator.
But we still want to know, does it depend on the observable only?
No. I just said, pick a function.
H.
Pick a function.
Yes.
Which we call H.
Yes.
You call it H.
Yes.
Start from here.
Yes.
Evolve with the flow.
Yes.
The function is arbitrary.
Yes.
Find its value time tau later.
Yes.
Assign that value to initial point.
Yes.
I didn't say anything about how I chose the function, but I have a function that I map to another function. Yes?
But the mapping is different if the original function is different, right? Yeah.
Your function, you can think of it as your initial position, is initial position in this evolution. It's just the evolution of functions instead of evolution of states.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'll try it a different way.
We want to know if it depends on H or not.
U does not depend on H. So U tau maps functions to functions.
I meant that U tau depend on H.
U tau does not depend on H. U tau maps an H to a new function.
Oh, U tau is a mapping on H.
Mapping on functions.
Yes.
Is that a mapping?
That's just a point
like. So it goes from space of H's to the space of H's, basically.
So if you give me a function H, a function of U, I'm the operator U. I will give you a function UTH, which takes U and gives you back H of STU.
It's mapping on H. Oh, so of course it depends on H. It's a mapping of H.
Well, the mapping doesn't depend on H.
I mean, the value, U tau
is depends on
H. H is its argument. Yes, so of course it depends on H. Otherwise,
think of U tau as a matrix, H is the vector.
Okay. Its argument is H. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So it says H's to H's, essentially. Yes. Okay. So having dropped a lot of the detail seems to have confused rather than simplified. So maybe that was the wrong approach. But anyway, so. You're happy here. Good. Okay. So, being a linear operator, you can ask the question, does it have a spectrum? And you can look for special H's, particular H's which have this property, which is an eigenvalue problem. Okay? We okay here? Okay. And if you find these guys, and then you project a particular vector-valued observable onto those, you can decompose that onto the eigenfunctions of the Koopman operator. Okay? So this is a bit mind-bending. It took me a while to get my head around.
Yes. All right, if I'm the only one to ask this, then I'm okay.
No, it's great. You're doing me a great service.
Well,
I'm very happy.
Somebody has previously shown me that this U tau is linear, but that was before I really understood that U tau is linear. Anybody else wondering why U tau is linear? No? Okay, then don't explain it.
Well, okay.
I'm sure there are people
like that. Oh, you think? All right. Explain why U tau is linear.
I shall try, having not really thought about bringing that in my head. If you go back to here and you think of it for H1, say, gives you another H1, you do it for H2, gives you another H2, and then you do it for H1 plus H2, then you get H1 plus H2 of the transform state, and that's true for any H1 and H2.
I guess I have to understand. Okay, just.
Am I wrong?
No, I'm sure.
It obeys superposition from this.
Maybe you're looking for intuition, and then I'm going to give some, and then Clancy's going to do it right. If you take x dot is f of x, and f is nonlinear.
X dot is f of x, yes.
And f is nonlinear,
yes.
You can equivalently write down an evolution of probabilities,
right. Yes.
Using f of x as partial p with respect to t plus v f dot grad p is zero, right? It's like Fokker-Planck. That equation is linear.
Yeah, so that's...
Yeah, so this is the adjoint. In that case.
Okay, just go ahead. Okay,
so to make it more obscure, it's the adjoint of Perron Frobenius operator.
So
more obscure, I'm sure.
So that actually really helped me understand what was going on.
I think I better hold back.
If you sort of throw away all this for a minute and just think about the way I sort of approach this. Was thinking about if you don't know what your state is, but you think it's just a point in your state space, that's okay, I think. Then you have a PDF over your state space. Okay, so then there's some equation which evolves that PDF according to your dynamics. So you know, maybe 20% over here, 50% over here, and then that evolves and changes. And that's a kind of advection diffusion thing, which is the Kolmogorov forward equation or Fokker-Planck. Doesn't matter, but that equation is linear, basically.
It's not Fokker-Planck, there's no noise. It's Perron's equation.
Okay, all right. I'm in an engineering department. I'm not so bothered.
There is no engineering card here.
Okay. It went off within 15 minutes. Okay. There is no noise as of yet, so...
Yeah, I wasn't worried about
it. So you have a PDF over the state space and it evolves, okay? So if you just take it a time and then a particular time after this tour, then the operator that takes you from there to there is the adjoint of the Koopman operator, basically. So think about it this way. Let's say you had the Lorentz system. It's just a point in R3, right? Yeah. So instead of evolving just that point, you had a whole ensemble of points, and you described it as a fluid in that 3D space. Yeah, yeah. That forward evolution, which you could code, right, is that forward operation of that PDF. Okay? So you're evolving this, I don't know what you call it, probability fluid. So you time zero, time tor, do that evolution, that's an operator. Yeah, and that operator is linear because probabilities add up that way. Okay, if you take its adjoint, that's that operator.
That's okay, well,
the interpretation of that operator in terms of action get
Okay.
Yeah, you
ask somebody else. Especially disappointed because I think he's the previous person to try to explain this to me.
The questions are precisely the same as
the ones I asked last time.
But my disappointment was that I didn't explain it to you.
there is an online course that does it extremely well.
Could you give the reference, please?
Yeah. It's called chaosbook.org.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Right, online.
Do you have a page number in this book?
No, it has a talking head and...
After three volumes printed out on
the shelf. No, it's videos. It's videos, 5 minutes each. Okay. It's for children. I mean, it's...
I'm working my way up to those.
But it's a second course, which is hard.
Okay.
Well, I still have to find out whether you took that beautiful explanation from the appendix to the main text.
Mm-hmm. No, Cookton is not mentioned because it's too trivial.
So having spent half my talk time on the first two slides, I feel it's incumbent on me to move the process along. So it's a linear operator. Yeah. So it has, or may have a spectrum. If it has eigenfunctions, you can project some vector value observable onto those eigenfunctions and you get something like that. And these coefficients of that projection are the Koopman modes. So let's say you have a periodic orbit, so everything is periodic in time. A decomposition according to those eigenfunctions reduces to effectively what's a Fourier decomposition in time. Okay? The Koopman mode is what I said before, it's these coefficients. So in this particular case, they're more or less the Fourier coefficients. Am I going to get my head lopped off yet?
So this is a different G than on the previous slide? Because previously G was a function of...
This should be a function of the this is a function of the state, I just didn't update my slide properly. So this should be a function of the state. What this was originally was U, because I was talking about the Koopman modes of the velocity field. So this is my mistake on the slide, essentially. So I was interested in the Koopman modes of the velocity field, which happens also to be the state by chance. Okay, so that's a notation mistake. So for this particular case, let's say I do the Koopman modes of the velocity field for a periodic orbit. I'm essentially just doing a Fourier mode decomposition of the state of the velocity field. Okay, yes.
The Koopman mode Gn is projections spanned by an eigenfunction of u tau. How are you selecting the n out of that? An eigenfunction is each of the eigenfunctions associated with an n? Frequency?
So this omega is the fundamental. It's a periodic orbit, just have...
So the u tau, the eigenfunctions of u tau are each...
I'm sorry, could you just go back one slide just for a second?
Yeah. Have I got another mistake on my slide? No?
No.
Okay. It's just the X on next slide is U, actually.
State vector or a velocity field? U, in the previous...
This is the state field.
That's the state vector. Okay.
But it's the velocity.
Which is the velocity field. Yeah, so it's the discretization of the velocity field, let's say.
Yeah?
And so then this used to say U, in which case everything makes sense. And then I thought, maybe I should change it to G, because when I put U, it confuses people. And now I've just made it a bit worse, but anyway.
Oh, it's U.
X is U. So if you put here U, this is the special case where G was the identity. Yeah? I'm causing Predrag pain, but that's good.
I think this is wonderful. I mean...
Okay.
That's what the workshop is about.
Okay, anyway, all of this is context, to be honest. The point is that the mean, the temporal mean, emerges naturally in this framework, okay? And so does the Fourier decomposition as a consideration of the spectral properties of this operator, okay? And it's all entirely natural, I think.
Is that a general thing, or is that just for when it corresponds to the Fourier decomposition? That the mean
It's a general.
That's a general. Yeah.
Yes. It's a projection of your state onto the eigenspace of Koopman at 1 in discrete case, 0 in the continuous time case. So it's an absolutely general statement. Another ergodicity that doesn't depend on the initial state.
Okay. So given that there's been a lot of discussion about how mean flow and stability calculations around the mean flow, what does that mean, and so on, I think it's nice to have a situation where the mean flow emerges naturally. Okay, we assumed a periodic orbit. If it's something else, you may get a continuous spectrum, which I'm just going to completely ignore. And what that pulls out is the spatial structure. I'm going to speed up. But the point is, at the beginning, we defined it with respect to a state transformation, but that state transformation, instead of being a marching forward of the state in time, could be something entirely different. It could be a rotation, a reflection, could be anything, really, okay? It's just a state transformation. So you can then ask the obvious question, well, if my U was the state vector, which is essentially a discretization of the velocity field, instead of marching it forward in time, I can just spatially shift it along. Okay, everything else is exactly the same, and you end up with, this is U again. I changed it to G and regret it now. You end up with a Fourier decomposition with a spatial mean in X instead. Okay, so it just naturally falls out. Okay, because it doesn't. It's just a state transformation. It doesn't really matter what it is. So then you ask the obvious question, well, what happens if I combine them? Well, I have a state transformation where I march forward in time and shift in space. And then you get this, pretend this is you again, please. You get this traveling wave interpretation because you have Fourier in space and Fourier in time. Okay, now, the point is, from my point of view, or my perspective, is that when Beverly and I did this resolvent mode thing, our starting point was a Fourier decomposition in space and time, and therefore a decomposition in traveling waves. And this is a situation where you can think about things in terms of Koopman modes, and the same sort of decomposition emerges naturally. So I thought that was nice. Okay, so many of you probably have no idea what I'm talking about with resolvent modes, so I shall quickly explain that. Am I a question? No. Okay. So let's say I have the same system. In the long run, allow things to sort of end up on an attractor. Just straight up do Fourier in time. We started off with the Laplace transform of the field. Notice that the mean equation, temporal mean, is the omega zero Fourier mode. And that was kind of where we started. You think of...
Does your dot mean material derivative?
No, this should be partial du by dt, really. Okay. And then think of the equation for the fluctuations around that mean. Okay, that has a part that's linear in the fluctuations, and it has what in Navier-Stokes would be the u dot grad u term. Okay, so it's a bit like just your usual expansion or perturbation, but instead of throwing away the second order, the u dot grad u term, you just rearrange it and you end up with something like this. Now my g is the u dot grad u term now. Slap myself on the wrist for notation again. Okay. And then, okay, you have this nice linear relationship between what we now interpret as the Koopman modes of u dot grad u to the Koopman modes of the velocity field. Okay?
Sorry, just knowing where you're going, can I just look at the previous slide very quickly? Okay, thank you.
Yeah? Okay.
Omega, were you assuming a periodic solution again? Or where?
Yeah, this is all assuming periodic. I mean, it doesn't actually make any difference. If it's not periodic, this is... Okay, so this is an integral. For periodic, it would just be a sum.
Yeah. So you're not assuming periodic?
Not here, no.
But
But I will be in a minute.
Aren't you sort of doing that if you're relating it back to the way you're doing the mean?
I will. Okay. Well, I don't understand what you're asking.
Because you're basically assuming that it's a Fourier decomposition, right? And then add it to the mean. Well, keep going, maybe I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I'm assuming that I can do that and all my omega are real. If my omega aren't real, that's also fine, but I just haven't done that. So everything's decayed onto something where it stays, basically. Okay. Right, anyway, the point is that you have this linear operator that maps the u dot grad u to the u, and then you can say...
And that's not an approximation.
No. No, this is just a rearrangement.
Just exact. You're keeping the all nonlinear terms in.
Yeah, it's just a question of interpretation, is that these nonlinear terms are just a forcing to a linear system. But they're also generated by that system.
Just.
Yeah.
Right, yes. It's a big deal.
Anyway, this is what we did. It's just a rearrangement of stuff. So it's a question of interpretation at this point. There's no approximation.
No approximation.
Yeah, there's no approximation. Okay, so this operator is kind of well known under previous different interpretations. It is the resolvent of L, essentially, so it relates back to the spectrum of the linearized operator. But the linearized operator that includes the mean flow and not a linearization around a fixed point. Okay, so now we have something where the spectrum of the linearized Navier-Stokes around the mean flow actually means something. Okay, so I was much happier with that than the interpretation of mean flows in linearizations, which I never quite got my head around. Anyway.
But what's the difference? Like the linearization around...
Well, if you go back to linearization theorem, you're thinking of the behavior of nonlinear systems around the fixed point looking like, or the other way around, the behavior of the linearization of the fixed point looking like the nonlinear system.
The mean flow is not the fixed point of
Navier-Stokes. Yeah, but there's no fixed point, there's no linearization, there's no throwing away the second order terms here. Okay. It's just rearranging and saying, I've got this thing which happens to be a linear operator. Okay?
You know, we'll bug you because this is all very important. I mean, the mean flow, you know, could be totally unrelated to the flow itself. When you're in state space, you know, you could be running around someplace on a huge, let's say, horseshoe, and mean flow is a point that's 1 mile away from any state.
Yeah.
So what's the virtue of, you know, basing expansion around a state that's got nothing to do with anything?
Because I can make progress. So
the numbers you're going to get are going to depend on your discretization, because
no.
At a fixed point, if you transform your coordinates, then you have new...
There's nothing discretization dependent in this. Igor.
My comment on this is, yeah, you're absolutely right. I can have a limit cycle, and this mean flow is going to dynamically mean anything. But in this theory, it is precisely the thing you should be linearizing about. So that is a departure from a state-space picture.
Dwight
has shown that if you base your linearizations around the mean flow, you get correct predictions for the Hopf bifurcation.
Only in some cases.
No, it is, yeah. No, I've shown it.
So let me qualify. Let me qualify. And he's going to come to that. So let me qualify. He put specific conditions under which the computation of the linearized Navier-Stokes around the mean flow is going to actually produce certain modes, correct? And then he said, if the Reynolds stress behaves in a certain way, then I actually get precisely that. What I proved is that in that case, under exactly his conditions, you actually, those modes that you get, the stable and unstable modes, are Koopman modes. And that works in general, as Ati is going to show. Fair?
I'm not sure if I am.
That's a fine argument. So there must be something, because she has a counterexample.
I really, really have to push on, because I'm at the beginning of the talk, and I'm going to go over time. So I'll just charge through, and I'm here for ages. So Anyway, the point is, there is this. I haven't approximated anything. I haven't thrown anything away yet. And I hesitate to call it a linearization because people immediately reflexively think, oh, you set the second order terms to zero, right? Which we haven't done. So you have this operator there. I'm interested in low order modeling. So how do you approximate a linear operator? If you ask the question, I want to find the projection that's closest to it in some sense, then the natural thing to try first is an SVD, especially, and it's not discretization dependent. And if you accept that there is something like this and that this guy can be approximated well by a low-rank operator, or if you try it and treat it as a hypothesis, then this U is going to usually, unless the nonlinear terms have a very special form, is usually going to look like the leading modes of this guy, the left singular vectors of this guy, right? So the flow lives in the space that's defined by the projection approximately. I'm very happy with approximations when they might make my life substantially easier, which this one does. So the error terms are everything else, right? Okay, so it looks like this. If you think of this as a loop, there's another u dot grad u which feeds back. This is like a feedback loop. Here, this is just the resolvent operator. So I'm a controls person by background, so I think in block diagrams, it looks like this, basically. So you have your, if you're just looking at this part of the system, you have whatever this is, first singular vector, second, third, and so on. So you have these gains, which are the singular values, and the actual coefficients depend on what the nonlinearity is doing. But the idea is if the singular values are separated enough, these guys are going to be effectively filtered out. Okay, it's effectively a filter. And so whatever these are, this is going to look like the leading left singular vectors of H. Okay? So what this does, what the SVD of H does, is effectively give you a basis in which you expect U to evolve. Okay?
Is that a general statement, or is it hopefully that the singular values are well separated?
There are good physical reasons for it, so which I'm not going to talk about. So originally when we looked at this in a pipe, if you write down that operator, the resolvent operator, you see that there's sources of high gain, so high singular values, depending either on where you have your wave speed close to a critical layer, mm-hmm. and you get that sort of high response. So high gain critical layer response, or close to the classical critical layer stuff where everything goes singular and you have to smooth it out somehow, or from the non-normality, and you kind of need both. So there are good physical reasons to expect it to be usually true. And
but it's not always true.
It's probably not always true.
I know it's not always true.
Yeah, okay. So it's definitely not always true, but it's true whenever I've really cared. And of course, the question is, well, you're doing an SVD,
it's the
so you
set of measure Lorette where it isn't true.
Yes, it's, but I'm not saying Lorette zero, so I can't say almost right.
Sorry.
There's hundreds of examples where it's not true.
Well, there.
It's yeah, Stephen has even a bigger set.
Yes,
of course.
Yeah, I mean, much bigger set than Lorette.
Could
okay.
be one over.
Right.
One over a Lorette.
So my interest is really pulling out the physics of it, right? And the benefit of these is that they give you physical structure, which I can then talk about and understand, okay? And it's very, very, very easy to compute, okay? It's just it's done. It's like a sub-second calculation. So so that's and if it's not good, then you just add more modes. Okay, but because of this critical layer thing, often these guys are, especially at higher Reynolds number, these guys at one or two. We did projections of turbulent pipe data onto these modes, and you get very good representation with 10 of all three velocity components. Now, the cheat is obviously you're doing an SVD, so you're implying some norm under which you're interested, okay, and we've always used the energy norm, which is completely dominated by the streamwise velocity. You could propose another one, but I like the idea that I can do energy budgets because the non-linearity is conservative, and I haven't really had a strong reason to use anything else. Okay. Anyway, to push on, the point is, and I think what Igor noticed, is that this resolvent is a linear mapping between the Koopman modes of u dot grad u and the Koopman modes of the velocity. Okay. So if it's true that these basis functions well approximate where u is going to resolve, then it's going to be true that the Koopman modes are going to look something like the leading resolvent modes.
Well, you keep saying u dot grad u. You mean the pressure projection of u dot grad u?
Yes.
Also, Archie, in the earlier when you gave your result for Koopman modes being Fourier modes, that's only true if the solution is periodic.
Yes. Right? So this is all an argument based on the flow being periodic orbit. Yeah.
Okay, so now we're back to assuming that it is a periodic orbit.
Yes. So the derivation of the the derivation of the resolvent stuff was maybe a bit more general, but then we just looked at the case where it's periodic orbit, because for the resolvent stuff we just started straight away that we're looking at traveling waves by fiat. Let us look at traveling waves, and there's maybe some justification. And remember, let's relate this all back to the first slide. The question was, why do those pictures look like those pictures? Well, it's because of this. So it's kind of obvious, I think, in the end, for the case that we looked at. Yes?
A dumb question. Those things you showed in the very first slide, they were traveling. Or it was some... What was the actual...
Let me try and remember, actually. Yeah, so they have a natural... In this case, we have a streamwise wavelength, a wave number, which we choose, and in this case it emerges from the data, okay? And they have a frequency, so this is, we use DMD, but they have a frequency associated with them, and you look for the corresponding frequency resolvent mode. And now I should say, actually, I forgot to come back to this, this was calculated from 2D slices, huge data sets, but knowing what we know now, the interpretation that you could have defined a spatial Koopman operator as well, we might as well have just used the Fourier coefficients in X. It was a stupid thing to do, use these slices, and it would have made our lives much easier and give a much cleaner result. And there's a good reason not to do that. So if you have a symmetry there, you should use it, which we didn't.
Well, that's always true.
Yeah.
It's always true that it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but we hadn't thought about it, so... Where did we get up to?
Yeah, so Antti, on that slide, just one back from here. Is it correct if I replace the word Koopman with the word Fourier?
Yes, so that's the other point. So it's partly perhaps a problem of having started off with a periodic orbit anyway. So this is stated in the time sense, but it's also true. Let's say you calculate the resolvent modes without having Fourier transformed in streamwise direction, for example. If you do that, the SVD gives you the Fourier modes anyway. Okay, so whenever you have this continuous translational symmetry, the resolvent modes just end up as Fourier modes in any case. So, and that's trivial to show, and it's also computationally what we found. Yes.
Isn't that almost the definition of the resolvent operators, that it relates the Fourier modes?
Well, you can either, fair question. Where are we here? So here, I haven't Fourier transformed in X, or streamwise, whatever you call it. And we just did the SVD.
I mean, just that thing at the bottom there.
Yeah. This?
No, sorry, maybe the slide before this. Yeah, that.
Yeah, so this is not Fourier transformed in X. You have a choice at the beginning. You either Fourier transform in X, and then do the resolvent at each KX, or you just do the big 2D problem, in which case you're effectively doing a Fourier transform the hard way.
I guess the only difference is instrument time.
But he's just saying that the thing at the bottom is the same thing, is equivalent to the thing on the top. Go up 1, 2, 3 lines, there. That's all. Is that
from
right?
Here to here, if you Fourier transform in time, this thing doesn't depend on time.
Right. That's what he's saying.
So this is kind of trivial.
He's saying that's equivalent to that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Different about Fourier transform.
Yeah, well. I think that's what I'm missing.
Yeah.
Is that you're talking about Fourier transform in space, the bottom line is talking about Fourier transform.
Yeah, so this is Fourier transform in time. If you then do the SVD of this guy, which we have done, okay, then you'll find that each resolvent mode is a Fourier mode in X.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can either go, well, I know that, so I'm going to Fourier transform in X and do the linear SVD problem at each KX, which is what we originally did, or if you want to hit it with a big hammer, you can do this very expensive big SVD problem and do a Fourier by the back door. So what it's showing is that the resolvent mode dependence on X is Fourier. Yeah, it's diagonalized.
I can know you have to speed up.
Yes, I completely do. But that's fine.
Yeah, we can, we're totally free to organize discussions.
But to be fair,
why haven't we talked in the afternoon?
Or, I mean, I can talk tomorrow morning if that...
I can do, the rest of the stuff is uncontroversial, so I can... I thought this was just the introduction.
For the week after the conference. Sorry? We just organize another discussion. Yeah, we just have a Koopman, you know, we have free time to do this. You are going now?
Well, let me zip through it and you can organize next week after.
I'm fine with moving my talk whenever.
I'll be 5 minutes to this, I promise. I don't want to.
But what's Bruno fine with? Bruno is in charge.
You take your 5 minutes and then we sort of.
Okay.
Okay,
so.
Question though?
Yeah.
The way you're defining the mean flow, you're basically saying the zero KX mode and the zero KZ mode.
So the way I've defined it, I haven't talked about KX, is the zero temporal mean.
Oh, so that's how you're defining your mean flow. It's not.
But if you introduce the spatial Koopman operator, the zero spatial, so it's the spatiotemporal mean comes out.
That's why I thought it had to be Fourier, the way you were defining it.
Well, you can do it either way. You arrive at the two paths sort of end up at the same thing.
Does this mean we're talking about here the value of the function evaluated over the invariant SRD measure on the state space?
I don't know.
Okay.
You mean if the mean flow? The mean flow? Yes.
Okay. So then there's an assumption that you can compute SRD measure, then expand around it.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. There is an assumption that there is a physical measure.
Yes, there is an assumption that there is physical. Now, my question is, have you tried this on Lorentz or Hanon attractor rather than these flows?
Of course.
Yeah. Because, I mean, computing the SRD measure is not always that trivial.
So for Koopman modes, I think Igor's dealt with this.
Okay.
So for the resolvent stuff, our first application was high Reynolds number turbulent pipe flow. And the situation that you've got there is, well, I don't know what the mean is. And unless I know the mean, I don't know what the fluctuations are. Unless I know the fluctuations, I don't know what the mean are. And so I just go, just assume the mean. And then you can make some progress and talk about structure and other things. Okay? So it's a very pragmatic way of thinking, essentially, from my point of view. Right, so the point is, resolvent modes, good first guess of Koopman modes. For the case that I'm talking about, periodic in X, for example, they all end up with the same spatial dependency. Where the symmetry is, if you're going to do a DND, maybe try and propose your problem such that the symmetries are used first. Expansion and resolvent modes. So my background is control, really. And if you use the resolvent modes to expand the Koopman modes or velocity field or whatever it is that you want, because they're cheap to compute, you can work out the sensitivity to boundary condition changes or other actuation, which we've done, and that gives you a nice way of doing it, whereas with Koopman modes, they're kind of more data-driven.
So here, when you're talking about the symmetries, you're talking about the spatial invariants that you're assuming?
Okay. Yeah. So do Fourier in X unless you have a reason not to. And the meaning of the mean flow in this linear operator is kind of okay, I think. It's clear now. For me, anyway. Right. So, quickly, this is a Lidrick-driven cavity. Almost one. Top lid's coming this way. I can't remember what I plotted. I think it's iso contours of streamwise velocity. It's a complex geometry, but you can still do resolvent modes. This direction is Fourierade in the DNS. This is the Monash crew who did it. So this is Semtex Hughes code. These are parameters. It's a nice problem because unlike turbulence, there's just three wave numbers that you're interested in and just a few dominant frequencies. So you can immediately go here. This is all the same. This is all the same. There's this linear operator between the two. We do the SVD. So you get the modes. We don't know these coefficients. So the weakness in all this resolvent thing, or one of the weaknesses, is we don't know the coefficients. You have to solve a nonlinear problem. But you can calculate the modes very easily. What you can do is stick a probe point in your flow and do at least squares to your for your mode coefficients, so long as your probe point has the modes have support at your probe point.
So your coefficients depend on your Reynolds stresses, right? So if you were to just measure your Reynolds stresses, could you get the coefficients from that, if you knew how to do that?
Wouldn't you need to know the Reynolds, the forcing term from the whole flow?
Because with your resolvent modes, right, your forcing term is essentially the divergence of the Reynolds stresses. So if you just measured the Reynolds stresses, then couldn't you...
Why not just measure the velocity...
I don't know which is easier to measure in all flows.
So maybe. I don't know. I haven't thought about it. And in the interest of rushing through it, I'll think about it later. So this is the fit to one resolvent mode per Fourier frequency pair at the probe point, which is going to be good, right? And this is at the other end of the cavity. So this is 0.1, 0.1, top left corner and the other corner. For one mode, that's not bad. This is what they look like. So I think the point of what do you want to get out of it anyway is structure and understanding, and this is just a single mode at each wave number and frequency, and it gets most things kind of right. So this is a video, I can't remember which one's which, but that's kind of the point. Yeah. It didn't repeat. Anyway, they look quite similar. Okay, so there are limitations. We don't know the amplitudes and phases of the modes, and you need to assume the mean up front. Yes?
Okay, now I'm going to pass from complete naive to the other extreme.
Yes.
This is the same as what Sip and Benedine have just done in JFM, right?
It's similar, but this was first.
Sorry, least squares.
Yes. So it's the same, but Paco did this before. This is, it came out, I think, in, there's a follow-up paper to this with a square cylinder. I mean, I like the paper that Sip and Benedine, Sip, et cetera, did. Fantastic. And they did some other stuff as well, which is
but
very valuable.
They didn't know about the previous thing, but I suppose. I mean, they.
Paco presented this in the square cylinder at the Australasian... I don't want to get into that
all
now.
Right,
it's
fine.
Unimportant. Okay. The point is that it works, okay? And whoever does it, it's a good idea.
Just to be clear, what you've done is you compute, you have the mean, and that defines you a resolvent operator.
Yeah. So Father Christmas gives us the mean.
You take the first small number of modes, and you project your dynamics onto those modes. It's effectively what you did.
Almost. Yeah. So we Father Christmas gives us the mean.
Yeah.
Then we compute the modes. At the frequency,
the modes of the resolvent.
Yes. The modes of the resolvent. Yeah. So to get those, we need the mean. So we have the mean.
Right.
Compute the resolvent modes. Keep one per frequency wave number that we're interested in. And then we do a least squares fit by sticking a probe here.
To do what? I mean, I don't
to get the coefficients, because we have basis, but we don't have the coefficients. To do that, you need some nonlinear fixing of it.
Oh, so you don't project.
But this is not a projection, no.
He just needs to know the amplitude projection.
Yeah, okay, I see.
So your mean here is depends on X and Y, or it just depends on...
Mean is 2D, yeah. So everything here is a 2D problem. So one of the reasons we did this is to be able to do it in a complex geometry where you can't Fourier.
Okay.
Just project onto it and just evolve it, let it choose its own amplitude naturally. Sorry.
Yes, but this is post-process.
Oh, it's post-process.
Okay.
Yes, that makes sense.
Anyway, we're at the end. So, we don't know the amplitudes, but it's very easy with a very small least squares problem to fix the amplitudes from data. Okay, it's a DNS, but it could have been an experiment. And yes, of course, you have to have the mean. Meaning of the mean flow is sort of sensible. We've got the coherence of the whole flow from just one probe point and a time trace of one probe point, which I think is a good way to think about. Also, the modes being an SVD are orthogonal. My U modes are all orthogonal, so they're kind of nice to work with, and they're ordered in a useful way. And then this is just a repetition, so I'm going to stop there, and I apologise, Denise, for having disciplined the rabble.
Any immediate questions?
Speculation. Suppose if I give you the relative references, the mean values, can you use that to improve this whole scheme that you have?
What are you proposing?
I have the mean and you have the Reynolds stresses. Let's say NM, mean Reynolds stresses, the average scale dot U.
I'm just trying to relate that to my right-hand terms. So,
right, so.
When you say the mean Reynolds stresses, does that basically give you F00?
Yeah,
that's just giving me the mean equation, but I already have the mean, so I don't care. I could have worked it out from the mean, right?
No.
No? Am I wrong? Did I say something stupid?
That's a non-linear term. You can't work that out from the mean. That's a fluctuation.
That's no,
he's saying it. But this is the F00 term that you're talking about. And I have all the other terms here.
Right.
You can't really? Work out the Reynolds stresses from the mean.
No, but he's saying
he's talking about the mean Reynolds stresses.
He's getting the mean Reynolds stresses.
Yeah. Isn't this term what you're talking about?
Yes.
The mean Reynolds stresses.
Right.
So I have one equation and one unknown.
This will be easy.
Okay.
So does the
small
experience with the 2D cavity help you think about how you're going to deal with spatially developing flow?
So the motivation here was to work up to aerofoils. Okay. Now with spatially developing flow, with the Fourier transform, you just allow complex Fourier in X. Or Laplace in X, or however you want to think about it. It doesn't. But then you can have exponentially growing, decaying in X. So we've done that actually. Beverly did an experiment which compared boundary layer locally parallel approximated resolvent modes to experimental data with the forcing at the boundary. So it's a trivial extension.
So
that's easier than the cavity case.
I can ask you offline.
Okay.
Why are we in a hurry? I don't understand.
We're not in a hurry. We're not in a hurry. I have sort of this feeling that this discussion is not really connected to. I mean, it's not touching base with many people. And my suggestion would be that from the experience that we just had, and the many questions that have been raised, we get together tomorrow afternoon. There is a slot tomorrow afternoon at 1:30 where this auditorium is reserved for open discussions. And as my proposal would be that the ones who have sort of the vested interest in this class get together and, I don't know, line up or think about a way of presenting it so that others can connect to it. Because the many questions that you have, probably other people have as well, and maybe if sort of the group gets together and prepares something on applications and whatever.
I've already done my best.
We reserved auditoria for empty times for people to self-organize, but in the week three. We can schedule
you
it now.
Friday.
You were outside.
You were out.
Yeah, I'm not.
We have some time tomorrow afternoon.
I can.
Clancy's also talking next week. I don't know if you were planning to talk about some of that.
I mean, the best person to talk about this is sitting there or there.
We should talk about today or tomorrow, whenever.
Tomorrow
1:30.
Tomorrow 1:30 is good.
So what's the feeling? I mean,
yes.
We can continue on like this, and
Or are we sort of a little time to
Digest it.
Organize it and to identify the questions that we want to ask and to do this tomorrow afternoon. There is a free slot where this auditorium is reserved tomorrow afternoon. We can get together, the ones that are interested in, and then have all afternoon to discuss that.
Choose a discussion leader. You choose a discussion leader, so that someone takes responsibility.
Okay. And in order to prepare for this, I mean, first of all, I should give Denise a chance to present what she's up to. I would suggest that, let's see, Clancy, Igor, Ati, Denise, who else has an interest, sort of get together after this session and sort of talk about a few of the elements that should be presented in the afternoon.
No, I would suggest, I wrote down a Koopman tutorial. That's what I have in mind for to address the kind of questions that Loretta was generating early on.
Right, and so, who wants to organize it?
I would nominate Igor.
Can you watch these videos too, maybe? Could you maybe send a link to these children's videos?
No. Okay. I mean, this is much better.
It seems to me there are kind of two related issues. One is the Koopman tutorial problem. The other is the issue of mean flows and the imbalances. And those are interconnected. And I'll nominate Lorette to maybe organize the mean flows. No?
I would love to see
it.
Talk about
what she said. It wasn't in your office.
Next to my office.
Are we going to spend food tomorrow afternoon?
Cool food tomorrow. Okay, cool.
I think one talk that tomorrow. Could we have one tomorrow morning? Is there other talks tomorrow morning?
We are free.
But coordinators.
Could we actually do tomorrow? I have something at 3 o'clock tomorrow that I cannot avoid.
The tomorrow morning.
Right, what's the situation with rooms around here?
Well, nobody else here
except us. Nobody else is here, so we
don't
have
to
be here.
There's availability, but you have to check with Corey.
All right. Let's assume this works. So, like when tomorrow?
10?
10:30. The generic time. All right, so which one do we do first? So we have one in the morning, then one in the afternoon. You're busy in the afternoon, so...
After 3, I'm busy.
Koopman in the morning, and...
The main flow in the afternoon?
Yeah. 1:30.
1:30, I agree.
Okay.
10:30. Well, so what do we mean by mean flow? Because I'm a little confused.
That's to be defined tomorrow.
Well, can talk about it. Okay. You'll figure it out. Something vaguely related to resolvents, I suppose.
It seems to me that this, it just is a historical remark, right? So, who told me? Steve Davis told me that this issue of the mean flow and linearization around mean flow has been going on since the 50s.
Yeah.
You know this history, right? I think there is a context, and it's not kind of a completely free discussion, because the context is, does the mean flow... Do the computations related to the mean flow have anything to do with the stability of, Navier-Stokes type systems? And the proposal is to discuss that, right?
Okay. So.
And we know some answers. In some cases, the answer is yes. We want to see whether the answer is yes, and under which conditions, right?
Well, I think that's the really fundamental question: is you say in some situations it's yes. Can you a priori say when it will work and when
yes,
it won't?
Yes.
No,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, we
can
just
have to
read it. All right. So you're in charge of tomorrow morning, 10:30.
But what's my charge specifically?
Koopman tutorial.
Koopman tutorial.
Koopman tutorial.
Address the question.
And you don't have to do this all by yourself.
The charge is to make Lorette understand.
Yeah.
Why don't you present it for 15-20 minutes and discussion will just get started?
So why don't I do a presentation on the board?
Yeah.
Would it hurt to send around some
no
link for us
no,
to read
no.
before a
Very
short
informal.
Thing? No?
Yeah.
Should we read for a little bit before some small amount?
Don't presume any reading on our part.
All right, we'll be like bad college students,
we're expected to spoon fit.
Yes,
please. No, we'll learn in the class, it's fine.
Yes. This is precisely what the wiki space is for. You can create a page called...
I knew that, but they don't want to do that, and that's good because I always was that kind of I'll make a
chapter on the wiki space, but it's not good. I mean, we still have to work on it, but that's, I'll be grateful to get help.
I'm happy to be a poor student.
So there will be a wiki page with literature on Cortez. And what about tomorrow afternoon with the mean flow?
What about it?
Are you organizing it?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So, or moderating it at least, yeah.
And can you set up a page with things to read? Is there something that one can read beforehand?
Yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm.
But again, maybe a little too much. I mean,
that's fine.
No, we'll do it, Lauren. We're all sharing right. The office. All right. Don't worry about
okay.
Very good. Great. Somebody have the wisdom to arrange this tomorrow free for all of the organization.
I would think we're not so far behind.
We're just 15 minutes
behind. We're just 15 minutes behind. That's
we're okay.
Okay.
We're just that clock's misleading.
Well,
yes.
So misleading that it's not misleading.
So, where does I go? Thanks a lot for the...